Morrison, Reel 2.
Were you horrified when you saw what condition they were in?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was shocking, really.
I understand that quite often they were all dirty still from the battlefield. They weren't
yes,
nice and clean. And
they weren't nicely
packaged.
Cleaned up, no. No, no, they weren't. That is perfectly true. And many of them had head injuries, so they were bandaged. Couldn't see very well what was the matter with them. But
had you expected that there would be so many?
No, I don't think we had. This is something I can't remember. We became so used to it that there were so many that you can hardly remember back to what it was like when it first began to happen. And I suppose we were as appalled as the people were over the Dunkirk thing. We didn't believe in the Second World War, we couldn't believe that the Channel ports had gone. Because in the First World War, of course, that didn't happen. We had the Channel ports and could do exactly what we liked in sending people off to come home if they were ill or if they were on leave. The Channel ports were never out of our hands. In fact, you could have gone if you wanted to, I suppose. Many of the men in the First World War did go to Paris on leave. If they only had a few days, they didn't come home. And they learned all sorts of strange French phrases that they used in there. Saint-Ferrien was the favourite one. And you can see how it came about, Saint-Ferrien. Saint-Ferrien, they used to say, it doesn't matter. And I think it was a sort of attitude of mind that it doesn't matter.
Did you know many young men who were overseas?
Oh, yes, I did. And many of my friends had brothers, husbands, and I had several cousins myself, all of whom were killed.
Did any of the people that you know ever turn up on stretchers in your ambulance?
No. No, I never encountered anybody. I think that belongs to the sort of charming romantic stories, don't you? No, I never encountered anybody, I mean. There were really tragic things. I had one young cousin. He was very young and an only child. And he joined up when he was really too young and had to get permission from his parents, who of course didn't want him to learn to fly. And he was only a kid. I could see him now so pleased with himself with his big fur gloves. And they wore their little hats on the side of their head. They were little forage caps, the Air Force of those days. And he was always smoothing back the other bit of his hair, which naturally blew about. And he hadn't been gone more than a few weeks when he was reported missing. And later he was known to be killed because without any warning they sent back all his uniform. This is one of the things that the Germans were very nice about in the First World War. They seemed to care about the airmen and buried them and put up little sticks over their graves. Of course, later they were all moved into graveyards. It's all a very unpleasant situation.
When you weren't driving an ambulance, what else did you do?
I can't remember that. I dare say I entertained myself. Because there were a lot of... there was a great desire to entertain those who came home on leave. So there were a lot of very good shows on in London at that time. And it wasn't considered wrong or naughty to go to theatre or enjoy yourself or go to dances. It was perfectly all right. But after I decided it wasn't for me, I was a bit at a loss time, particularly as the friends I'd made who I'd been working with didn't agree with me at all and couldn't see the point. What was I doing that was wrong? I was only doing helpful things. And this is one of the this was one of the major difficulties of the women in the Second World War who were called up. No one could see why they wouldn't be willing to nurse, look after people in that sort of way. But I did feel that I was taking the place of a man to go and kill and be killed. But dying for your country is not really true at all. You're killed, yes, or you may be killed, but you also have to kill. And patching them up to go back and get on with the killing was much more important than anything else, really. There were a lot of casualty stations in France and Belgium where they patched them up, got them back as quickly as possible.
How much did you know about what was going on over in France?
Well, we had a lot of things. You see, they came back on leave, but though they were pretty unwilling to talk about it because they only wanted to forget it. And they were brought over here to be in hospital. My brother-in-law was in Guise. He was gassed, and he couldn't speak for a very long time. But when he could speak, he was quite prepared to tell us what was going on. I think we had a lot of information firsthand from what was going on there, which we didn't have in the Second World War at all.
And did the soldiers know what life was like at home in Britain?
Well, I think they thought that we didn't really understand what was going on. There wasn't the feeling that the Second World War had, that the people at home were in much danger as they were. There was none of that feeling. You were all right. Of course we had rations. They knew about that and they could bring home things and did. Because every effort was made for them to have food and sweets and all the things they really needed. Whereas we were rather strictly rationed. More so, I think, than in the Second World War. Because you could go to a restaurant in the Second World War. You could go to two if you wanted, and have two slap-up meals, but you couldn't. In the First World War, you had to have a coupon if you went to a restaurant. I didn't know the type of white feather women. I didn't encounter them. But I was always rather shocked by it, that women should accuse men of being cowards if they weren't in uniform, because there were a lot of people who, for one reason or another, couldn't go, might have been health. All of them had to take a medical. Might have been health, it might have been that they had to do other things, because the world had to go on. But I didn't know any of those people myself. Who felt so urgent, and I didn't myself have this hatred of the Germans that so many people seem to have.
Did that spring up with the coming of the war, or had that been the British feeling?
I think it was the war, and really very terrible things were done to Germans in the First World War, which, strangely enough, did not happen in the Second World War, where you would have thought people would have been more angry with Hitler and his general behaviour. But they smashed the windows of shops belonging to Germans, and I never felt like that. I never had any feeling that people who just aren't the same nationality as myself, I've got something wrong with them. But the general hatred of the Germans was very strong in the First World War. I don't think it was in the Second World War. I think they were the Nazis, yes, but that there was, in a way, a sense of pity for the Germans in Germany under Hitler.
Did you hear a lot of stories about evil and cruel Germans?
Oh, yes, there were terrible atrocity stories. Children's hands being cut off, people being crucified. I can't remember them all now, but there were... This was no doubt designed to work us up to fight, but... I don't remember anything like the same in the Second World War. It's rather strange, isn't it? When you come to think of it.
Did you ever know any Germans?
Yes, I had a German friend who... she and her husband were interned when the war broke out
here.
The First World War. And I think were repatriated, I think that's what it's called when you're sent back to your own country. And I lost touch with them entirely, but she was very nice, I was very fond of her. But everybody said they were spies. I don't think they were, but they may have been. How does one know? But you see, that when you think of it, some of these people who have been found out to be spies, who were living very ordinary lives and much liked by their neighbours. Because this is it, people are quite nice, really, if you have to do anything so awful as that. But we call them spies when it's another country. If it's us, then we call them intelligence.
Was there a lot of fear going around about spies?
I don't remember it. I don't think so. I don't think we ever thought we were going to be invaded. Whereas in the Second World War, I quite definitely thought we might be. Backs to the wall, I remember. And of course I knew people who were in France. Vera Brittain, for instance, the writer who wrote Testament of Youth. And I have another friend who lives in Chelsea, and I still see her sometimes, who went to the war as a nurse. And they remember this awful feeling that we really were being defeated. And Haig, General Field Marshal, whatever he was, General I suppose he was then, there was this famous speech in which he said, "Our backs to the wall, we went to move and fight to the death." And then these great A1 Americans appeared, and we've never quite forgiven them, because they've always said they won the war, and in a way they did. I think we were pretty well at our last gasp when they came. There they were, great, strong, huge, fair-haired giants, with all their equipment.
What did you think of the other allies?
The Italians.
Other British people.
The Italians and the Australians, you mean?
Yes.
And the Indians,
French,
of course.
Canadians,
yes, Canadians.
Belgians.
Well, I think there was a tendency that I don't think I felt like that, because as I think I've told you, I don't really feel like that about my fellow human beings, to think that they were really not so good as we were. The Australians, of course, were thought highly of, because they were the people who assisted in the disaster of Gallipoli and the Dardanelles, which we had been taught at school were impregnable, but apparently Kitchener or whoever it was didn't think they were, and that was really a disaster, the Gallipoli, absolute disaster.
In your ambulance driving, did casualties come in sort of spurts, depending on the big battles, or was there just a steady, constant flow?
I think it was fairly steady, but the big battles Yes, then you didn't really, when there was a tremendous lot of people coming in, you didn't any longer work according to your shifts. You really had to be on the go all the time if a great many trains were coming in from all over the place, and of course they were.
Did you drive at night as well?
Oh yes, yes.
And was that difficult in the dark?
I don't remember it being difficult, no. See, we didn't have a blackout like we had in the Second World War, which I look upon as one of the worst things of the Second World War, not being able to see. And I was older and not being able to see in this extraordinary idea we had that you take down all the names from the stations in case the Germans recognised where they were.